Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Good morning, good morning. College football recap, week number 4. I didn't say preview this time, so at least we are starting off on the right foot.
There we go.
Chris, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well.
You're on location, aren't you?
Yes, sir. In Cleveland, baby.
Cleveland,
in the
Ohio.
Land.
Ohio.
Yes, sir.
Getting ready for the Browns and the Rams. I can get with it. All right. We got a lot to discuss. First off, though, show always brought to you by Tunica, Mississippi, the South's premier sports gambling destination. They have got 6 wonderful sports books. You can go check out more information about them over at tunicatravel.com. You can find more information about us at winningcureseverything.com. We had what you would call a rough Saturday.
Oh.
Woo.
Oh.
That was bad juju, man. That was other level kind of stuff. I got some bad beats yesterday.
some of mine were bad beats. Some of them I just didn't deserve to win. They weren't close.
The
2-point conversion screwed me in 2 different games. Coaches have learned to do math.
Yeah.
And they start going for 2 earlier. And when you've got dogs and Vegas is really good at getting the point spread right, that tends to help the favorite more than the dogs.
Yeah. The Oklahoma State game for you was a travesty.
And the Kansas game. Kansas game, same thing. West Virginia went for 2, won by 5. So,
man, me losing that Washington State game last night after
Washington State losing that game last night.
Just period. But
we scored 10 touchdowns.
I had a minus 18 and a half. They were up by 32 with 6.5 minutes left in the third with the ball. What are we doing?
I don't know.
All right. We'll
do 9 touchdowns. So we can get there before we start.
We'll discuss it. We'll figure this out. We'll walk our way all the way back through it so that I can, you know, a little therapy session, I guess. Let's start off our starting 11 with number 1, Georgia 23. And Notre Dame 17. This was an instant classic. Now, before I say anything else, am I crazy or was that pass interference on that last Hail Mary on the 4th down for Notre Dame?
It was 100% pass interference. And I don't think you're giving Notre Dame the game by calling it. Like, I understand swallowing your whistle because you don't want to decide the game. But you call that. It's not a touchdown. It doesn't end the game. It doesn't change the game. It just keeps Notre Dame alive.
Yeah.
But it absolutely was pass interference.
And it's – okay, so I'm not nuts here. I mean, No.
You're talking about 2 guys that picked Georgia that didn't think Notre Dame would be in this thing, but that was pass interference. It just was.
Georgia had 339 yards. Notre Dame had 321 yards.
275
of which was passing. Look, Georgia wasn't dominant because I think Notre Dame schemed really well. they've got, like, their defense is not super big, right? They're not going to be able to go man for man with Georgia's offensive line. But it was obvious they had some quick dudes. They were filling in gaps very quickly, and they were hiding it. And it was a fantastic game plan.
Brian, this might be
Lee and that bunch.
Yeah, sorry, I don't mean to overstep. No, sorry, this might be the best team that Brian Kelly's had in this run, and they do look good. And it's a shame that, yes, it's a shame that people just assume, oh, they've been blown out before when we let them in, and they can't hang with the SECs and the Clemsons of the world, and so they don't deserve to get back in. Those teams are not this team, and they absolutely deserve to be in the conversation with the rest of these guys. I know they've got one loss on them, and there's a lot of teams that are undefeated. This shouldn't make them fall very far.
There's a bunch of those teams at Georgia.
You damn straight they would. And there's a lot – that atmosphere last night, everybody was like Georgia by a million.
Yeah.
When that game started, it was just around the world unanimously. I mean, I'm talking professional bettors that don't get into hype and they don't give into atmosphere and those types of things were like, add 10 points to this point spread. You can't beat it. This is going to be unbelievable. And not only did Notre Dame like hang with them early, they led early. They controlled the game. They held Georgia to nothing offensively early.
Yeah.
I was so impressed with Notre Dame. Loved every second of it. And Georgia, obviously, they're the winners. They looked really good, too. I think Notre Dame had one bad quarter where they let Georgia score a couple of unanswered points, and it got away from them.
Yeah, that was the third quarter. I think the total yardage was like 200-something yards to 18 in the third quarter.
One quarter, they got dominated, and it was the game.
Yeah, and that determined the whole thing.
Yeah, they won the other three quarters.
The fourth and one call late in that game where they decided to kick the field goal.
Yeah.
Explain this to me. How does that make any sense? You're already up by two scores, and you kick a field goal to go up a little more than, you know, still two scores.
I think it's just one of those situations where you're Brian Kelly, you've been housed in all of these games.
Well, this was Kirby. Like this was
because
Kirby at fourth and one, they're up 20-10.
What part of the game are you talking about?
This was like early fourth quarter, mid fourth quarter.
After they went on that run in the third quarter,
where they're down there, and you've got a chance to go up really 27-10. You got a chance to dominate this thing, and instead you.
Well, even if you don't get it, you still pin Notre Dame back pretty far.
Exactly.
And your defense hadn't given up many drives. I mean, it's been a low scoring game. I feel about Kirby and in game coaching during big games. I think there's not another coach that has won as much as him and as highly praises him, whose butthole tightens up more than anyone else's, and he makes mistakes. If you can get him stressed in games, he will give you the game. Almost gave him the game last night.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely did. I wondered in that situation because of, you know, everybody thought he should have actually punted against Alabama last year. Some of his more aggressive play calling in the past has bit him, but that's because it was such a odd time to do it. But last night, fourth and one.
You can't look at that fake punt that he ran against Alabama and say it's an odd time. Like, that's a moronic thing to do, A. It's just stupid. Even if it worked, it was still a dumb play. Like, that doesn't help you win the game.
Completely different in a tie game as opposed to you're already leading and it's fourth and one. Like, fourth and one, different from fourth and one.
Yeah.
So, just ridiculous. Georgia did look good. Notre Dame did look good. That was a real deal, big-time college football game. I was impressed with both teams.
The quarterbacks that are going to come out in this draft this year might be the best we've ever seen in the history of the NFL. I personally have penciled in Tua to be number one overall, to be the best quarterback. Am I just overlooking Fromm? I mean, he looks so – he just doesn't make the mistake –
He
doesn't make mistakes.
But he also, like, you want a little more Like there's so he can make his back shoulder throws, he can make his crossing throws. He like all of this stuff, he's got a little problem with like some touch passes here and there. Everybody does. I get it. It's like I think he's probably a top 5, top 10 pick. I don't think he's as good as Tua, and I wonder, I think he's a better decision maker than Justin Herbert, right?
Oh, so, I do too.
And then after that, who else is coming out this year? I mean, those are the top three, right?
Well, like Joe Burrow's going to come out, and yeah. Jalen's going to come out. I'm going to tell you, if Jalen continues to do what he does, and he can do it in the playoffs against some of these big boy teams that he's going to have to play, he does it against Texas. Like what Lincoln Riley is doing is just there's no check you can cut him big enough. If you're Jerry Jones and you win the Super Bowl this year, I still fire Jason Garrett and offer him ownership in the team. Just give him 10% of the team, which is worth like $1 billion, and just say, come on, we got this.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I don't know, man. Kellen Moore's doing pretty good out there. So,
hey, you don't have to get rid of Kellen. But yeah, get rid of Kellen. Lincoln, just listen. What Lincoln is doing,
those two together,
is magical. What Lincoln's doing, I've never seen before. This quarterback class, and Burrow's the throw in, because up until this year, he's never done anything close to this. But how much of that was system? Like, we didn't know he could do this because he never had the opportunity or the chance.
Yeah. No, I'm
he's the throw in, and his numbers are better than everybody else's.
Yes. Yesterday was ridiculous. I didn't put it on here.
I know you didn't. I knew you weren't going to. That's okay.
Well,
that's
right. I didn't put it on.
Can I throw in an LSU thing just real quick? Just real quick. I got two stats for LSU. Two stats. One, by 10 a.m., they had already drank half the bars on Broadway out of vodka.
That's true.
And before the end of the game, they had already drank the entire stadium dry of all the beer. When I read stories like this, is it bad that it makes me feel like such a proud papa to know that?
No, that's not bad at all. I thought that you would.
I'm so proud of them. I'm so proud of them.
All right. Well, speaking of proud papas, let's move into number two. Let's talk about Wisconsin, because I know you're proud of your boys up there in Whiskey.
Yeah,
35-14 over Michigan. Jim Harbaugh, there are some real deal questions at this point. Wisconsin is 100% legit. Jonathan Taylor had 23 carries, 203 yards, two touchdowns. That's 8.8 yards per carry. 359 yards rushing on this Michigan's defense.
That's a legit Michigan defense, yes. People. Now, I know that we are crapping on Michigan, talking about how overrated they are. That defense is not overrated.
No.
Wisconsin's front line moved them around like they were children.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the time of possession, Wisconsin had it 41 minutes and 7 seconds. Michigan had it 18:53. Michigan had 4 turnovers, Wisconsin 0. That's the kind of stuff when we talk about efficiency metrics, etc. It has to do with success rate,
correct,
turning the ball over, etc. Those things do come into play in these situations. This game got out of hand quickly.
Yep.
It was if Michigan had been able to hold on to the football and not turn it over, and you know, even at that point, even if you are getting physically whipped, you can stay in a ball game and find a way to make it, you know, at least competitive.
Here's the thing. I don't know that you can when a team like Ohio State or Oklahoma is out running you and they're doing it with the pass. There are ways for you to get lucky and to have a couple of things go your way and kind of hang in that game. But you and I have talked about this many, many times. When a team just physically manhandles you in the trenches and they run it down your throat over and over and over and over and over again, it does so much more than just get yardage. It devours the clock. You talked about that.
I don't know if you saw the videos of the Michigan team like running out there middle of the fourth quarter, running out of the, they had quit.
Well, it makes you. I was just about to say it breaks teams' will. It really does. I've watched enough football to know when the best Alabama teams of all time are not the ones that you have now where they're putting up 50, 40 points a game. It were the ones where they just lined up and then just pulverized you from the front lines back. And there's nothing you could do about it. It didn't matter how you scheme the defense. It didn't matter what guys you rotated out there, what defensive front you played, play nickel, play dime, play 4-3, play 3. It doesn't matter, 5-2. There's nothing you can do when an offensive line gets a hold of you and just has their way with you. It breaks your spirit. It breaks your will to play. Yes. It makes you want to quit. And I don't know that makes me question Michigan's toughness. I think this Wisconsin team is more real than I could have ever imagined before the season. This is the style of football I love so much. It's one of the reasons I grew up loving LSU. This is what we used to play before we found an offensive quarterback, and what we have now is fun. But I remember watching old school Wisconsin games where they'd put up 500 yards on the ground on people. Okay. This is that. That is a real team that Michigan has with real NFL players. Nobody the rest of the year will do what was done to them yesterday. Oh, nobody.
I agree. Now, other teams may score a bunch of points.
They won't do it like that. They won't. It just won't. They won't get manhandled in another game.
No, not the same way. Like
they might get outscored because their offense sucks and they just can't find their way.
Yeah.
I said it on our preview show. I think they needed to go to shape to McCaffrey, and they need to bench Shea. I think he waited way too long in this game to bench Shea.
That was a major league mistake. That was waving the white flag is what that was. Like that's all that was at that point in the game.
Well, yeah, because but McCaffrey came in and had a couple big drives and scored some touchdowns, got some points on the board.
That's still, I mean, not great numbers, wasn't super efficient.
Oh, well, but that defense is incredible. I mean, he just looks better than Shea. As soon as you know you've got a losing hand, you fold it. As soon as you know you've got a loser, you fold it. And
I'm curious if they're going to go back to Shea, you know, the next go round.
I personally would not.
At this point, I mean, it may not even matter. Like that's what situation they are in right now because I think Harbaugh could leave for the NFL after this season. I think he is.
Oh, I do too. But I also think he could salvage this season if they roll off the rest of the rest of the Big Ten's not that crazy. You roll off the rest of the Big Ten and you just gear up for the game and find a way. Jesus Christ, you got to find some holes in Ohio State. I have no idea how this Michigan team would ever hang with them, that is a rivalry game.
Yeah.
And if you can find a way to win that game and you finish this season with, you know, one, maybe only two losses and you beat Ohio State, all that happened yesterday. And also the thing that's going to help them, and we'll get off this game. I know we spent way too long on it. Wisconsin's going to do this to everybody. Yeah. Okay. When Iowa rolls in, they're going to do it to them. Okay. Everyone on their schedule. They are going to physically hurt their feelings.
You know how much I love Iowa.
I know.
I don't know.
I do too. I do too. And I love that defensive line. My guy is a D-line coach. Kelvin, I can't help you. I got nothing. I got no answers for this.
I'm all over Iowa whenever that spread comes out. Because I love Wisconsin.
I don't know the number. I'll take Wisconsin.
But
I don't know the number, and I don't care. They treated grown men like children yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous.
And they're going to do it again next week and the week after that.
Week after, and
every week until the season's over.
Yeah,
they might be the best team in the country.
They might be. We'll talk about our top 10 at the end of this as well. Let's move into the next topic. Pac-12 After Dark. And I had this way down on my list at first, but this morning I felt like this deserved to be up towards
in the A
the
block. Yeah, this needs to be in the A block.
So we got two games here that we'll talk about.
Okay.
UCLA 67, Washington State 63. And then on the back half of this, it was Colorado 34, Arizona State 31. Because what this did after, you know, we also had another topic here, but the only undefeated Pac-12 team as of September 22nd, is the Cal Golden Bears.
Yes, sir.
Every other team in the entire Pac-12 has a loss. Arizona State goes to Michigan State, comes home and gets beat by Colorado, who lost last week to Air Force. You've got UCLA, who has looked like complete trash for 3 weeks. And Washington State is up 49-17 with 6 minutes left in the third quarter.
You know how bad this hurts, right?
And, oh, I know it's killing you because you are a leech guy, but I had money on Washington State last night because, look, I cannot stress this enough. UCLA was, like, number 119 in yards per play allowed and, like, 127 out of 130 in yards per play on offense.
They ain't that no more for the yards per play on offense.
Oh, no, no, no. They,
now they allowed a shitload of yards.
Yes, they did. look, Anthony Gordon had 9 passing touchdowns last night for Washington State and lost the game.
This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life.
So it was 49-17 with 6 minutes left in the third quarter, and UCLA drives right down the field and scores to make it 49-24. And that is when everything went crazy. Washington State fumbled a ball after a pass, and it looked like it may not have been a fumble, but they didn't review it. They didn't, or they did review it, but they held it up because they couldn't figure out the indisputable evidence side of it, whatever. So UCLA scores on the very next play.
Yep.
And then Washington State gets the ball back. They have to punt, and they give it right back to UCLA, who returns the punt. Who, I mean, it's just, you had a 100-yard kickoff return for a touchdown. You had a 69-yard punt return. You had 6 turnovers, 4 of which were fumbles. Like, I am just, Washington State gave away that game last night, and it irritates me to no end. Now, once Chip Kelly saw some blood in the water, that was the old Chip Kelly. That was the Chip Kelly that absolutely took advantage of the situation and went out and let his quarterback have fun, right? Like, that team looked like they were having fun. They were hitting everything in stride. They could do no wrong. Is this the Chip Kelly that we get for the rest of the year?
I can't answer that. You know, I'm not a stats guy. I like watching these games. And then afterwards, I look at the numbers and I see, does the numbers tell the story of the game?
Got to tell the story.
Got a couple numbers for you. It's laughable. It's laughable.
Yes.
Gordon, 41 of 61, 570 yards of offense, 9 TDs. 9, Gary. Are you insane? Hang on. But not to be outdone, young man. Robinson, 25 of 28, 507 yards, 5 TDs. We had a total of 14 touchdowns. There was 1,377 total yards of offense last night in this game. That's the most asinine thing I've ever seen. There are going to be SEC teams that won't have 1,300 total yards when the season is over with. That's ridiculous. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life.
Like,
and we saw it in 4 hours.
I thought, because I was also watching Colorado and Arizona State at the same time, I thought there was like some pretty good offense going on in that game. You had 475 yards of total offense from Colorado, and you had 453 from Arizona State, and they were going back and forth.
Those are kiddie table numbers.
That's nothing. That's nothing.
Those are jump numbers.
So both
almost 1,400 yards.
So Washington State is proof that if you do not win the turnover battle, you are probably going to lose the game. -5 for a turnover margin is inexcusable. Like, that bunch did not know what they were doing. They completely folded. Like, once UCLA started coming back, and it drove me insane. My Twitter feed is full of how stupid the Pac-12 is, and I love it, and I hate it. God, I hate this conference so much.
That was a 70-something over-under total for that game. They doubled it. Yeah. They almost doubled the damn thing.
Yeah. That's just ridiculous.
Well, it was UCLA spectacular was not supposed to watch.
To score.
Well, like, Chip Kelly, be damned. He heard you talking all that noise last week. He said, you know what? Nah, this shit stops now, today.
Well, Chip, like, as long as you're back to being yourself, I'm down with it. But if you're going to come out next week and, you know, get your quarterback fumbling and throwing picks and not knowing what he's doing, like, don't give me that noise. Like, I'm so tired of it because they look like complete garbage for the first 3 weeks. Everybody thinks, oh, my God, they're just rigged.
It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yes, because I'm thinking, like, okay, I've got Washington State minus 18.5. They're up by 32, so if UCLA scores two touchdowns, well, then we'll only win by 18, and, you know, maybe it'll go back and forth, but, like, I'll at least win by 18. I just need – a little more. I need one more touchdown, and then it goes haywire. And
haywire doesn't even come close to describing how this game went. Oh, here's the thing: I'm not a coach. I've never been one. I don't understand all the nuances of watching film. I have no earthly idea what those coaching staffs are doing this afternoon. What are they even looking at?
Well,
what are
you looking? Still sleeping for? Right now.
Well, I'm just talking about this afternoon. Obviously, when they get up. Like, yeah. What on earth are you looking at? Well, we put up about 700 yards of offense. Not really sure how we lost this game.
They're probably discussing how to hold on to the football without fumbling it, because that was ridiculous. Yeah. Oh, that's irritated me to death. All right, let's talk about more Pac-12 after dark crap. We got USC and Utah.
Friday night.
From Friday night. Third stringer Matt Fink shows out, and Graham Harrell, I think, is the best assistant coaching hire in college football this season, period. Matt Fink was 21 out of 30, 351 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. The passes consistently floated, and receivers had to come back to some of these passes. I don't know how much of this game you watched, but they had to turn around and, like, actually adjust for them, which is really difficult for defenses to be able to adjust to, right?
That's right. A lot of pass interference calls.
Yeah, so, like, Slovis really has some zip on the ball. Like, he can throw the ball really well. Fink throws a different kind of football. So
very
when
much
the receiver,
a touch pass.
Yeah, when the receiver's allowed to adjust for it, it completely threw off what they were used to doing. Now, they were able to get some pressure on USC. You know, they were able to dominate, maybe not dominate, but they had some success against that offensive line. USC had 22 rushes for only 13 yards in this game.
Like, that's Utah football, though.
I mean, at time of possession, Utah had the ball for 38 minutes and 12 seconds. USC had it 21 minutes, 48 seconds. USC had 2 turnovers. Utah had 1 turnover. Like, everything on the stat sheet tells you Utah should have won this football game. And it kind of started the trend of, oh, the Pac-12 is going to really do this year, huh? Okay, like, they're going to just end it early. Like, it's cannibalism in September. Like, instead of waiting until, like late October, November, like, let's just wipe everybody out early. That way Larry Scott doesn't have to think about it, right? And so, yeah, this was an interesting game to watch. Did you actually watch it Friday night?
I didn't get to see much of it. I went to the Indians game when I got to Cleveland.
That's right.
I watched a lot of the highlights. And I looked at the scores. So you started this off with Graham Harrell.
Yeah.
And I think – I was thinking about this after this game. He's doing such an incredible thing there with – hey, let's not kid ourselves. USC's got talent. They probably have the most talent in the Pac-12. Maybe Oregon's got a little bit better than them, but they got obviously a better quarterback. But, I mean, you have a 7-3 deep at quarterback, okay? One guy goes down, the next guy's not much worse than him, maybe better. Then that guy goes down. I was like, well, holy crap, maybe this guy's better than the other dude. Like, who knows? My question is this. If you're Graham Harrell and you see how much success you're having, would you rather, let's Clay Helton gets fired, whatever. saves his job. Don't know what's going to happen there. If you're Graham and some big monster school comes after you to be their OC and they pay you a couple million dollars, do you continue to stay an OC where you see you are just a raving success? Or do you try your hand again at being the head? Because there are going to be schools that are going to say, holy crap, man, this guy didn't lose anything. He was just kind of a pain in the ass to deal with. But we're fine with that. He's a football coach. Let's bring him in and give him a shot. Do you try your hand again at the head coach?
Now, you're talking about Graham Harrell?
Yes.
Well, I mean, when was he a head coach before?
Wasn't he at Arizona State?
No, you're thinking about Todd. Good gracious. Graham Harrell was the...
Where'd Graham come from?
He came from North Texas. But let's see. Hold on, I'll tell you. Because he's one of the Air Raid guys. He was one of Leach's guys.
I knew he was under that tree, but I thought he had a head coaching job.
2009, he was a quality control coach at Oklahoma State. Then he played in the NFL for a little bit. He was a backup at the Packers, backup at the Jets. He came back. He was a, offensive assistant and wide receivers coach for Mike Leach in 2014-2015.
I knew that. After that, I thought he left for a head coaching job.
Nope, he was the offensive coordinator at North Texas from 2016 through 2018. So
why did I think he went to?
I don't know. But Todd,
completely different person then.
Yeah,
Todd Graham.
Todd Graham. There you go.
That's all right.
That's who you're thinking. The name, Todd Graham. The name, Graham Harrell. I get it.
Yeah, the names crossed dyslexia as a son of a bitch. Okay. I thought this was a different person the entire time, even though I've seen his face. I know who he is.
Yeah, no, this guy's young. Like,
I absolutely would give him a head coaching job.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean,
this guy next year is going to be a head coach somewhere.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I
mean, you're 100%.
This has been absolutely bonkers to see USC doing this. Now I don't know if it's going to last because I mean they do play Washington this next week and then they have to play Notre Dame and you know, but
in his world, he just needs the offense to stay great. Doesn't matter.
After that point, like if you lose both of these games, you've got three losses, right? So you're sitting at 3-3 if you lose both of them.
Correct.
But after that, I mean, it's not exactly like a ridiculous schedule. So, like, it's feasible. They could end up, like, 9-3, 8-4.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
While
they're still USC, man. We start this by saying they've got more talent than everybody else for the most part. Yeah. In the past.
I don't know that 8-4 saves Helton's job, but I don't know. We'll see. Let's move on. We're taking forever on this. I'm sorry.
No.
Next topic up, Pitt 35, UCF 34. And I'll go ahead and parlay this together with the Thursday night game with Tulane 38, Houston 31. But let's talk about Pitt and UCF first. Pitt jumps out to a 21-0 lead and looks dominant.
Man, for 21 points and a half,
yeah,
in 3 years.
I mean, but they do this every year to somebody.
Right? To somebody, you're right.
It almost always happens at Pitt. Now that we had the 1 year at Clemson that was a little crazy, but yeah, led 21-0 in the second quarter. Pat Narduzzi was actually aggressive in his play calling, and this was for like the entire game. So I had this on one screen. It ended the UCF 27 game regular season winning streak, which
pretty
is
incredible.
That's absolutely incredible. That's, you know, longest regular season winning streak in the country. That was fun to watch. I mean, UCF came all the way back. I don't know that Dylan Gabriel is quite there yet, but he is. I don't know that they'll lose again in the AAC, but that was an absolutely incredible game to watch.
Agree. Like, I completely agree. The final play, and you're right. Like, I fully. Watching this game, I just didn't believe that was Pat Narduzzi on the sidelines. Like he's been taken over by somebody else.
It was strange.
Because this did not look like him at all. And the only thing I can think of is they were just sandbagging the first 3 weeks of football. And they were just like, we don't care if we lose these games. UCF's going to come in, and we're beating them. So let's just throw away the opening 3 weeks of the season. And then when UCF gets here, well, look, I'll make some dumb call at the end of the Penn State game that nobody can make rhyme or reason as to why I did what I did, and everybody will be wanting to put me in a straitjacket. But when UCF gets here, we'll open up the playbook and we'll show everybody what we're really about. That's the only explanation you get, right?
Yeah, pretty much. That was insane. Now to parlay that with this, I told you last week.
You did?
That I had heard several people talking about this, and it was people that I had not heard talking about it before that said that Tulane had the most talent in the AAC and that they were going to cover the spread against Houston and that they were probably going to win the AAC this year. And just talked about it so nonchalantly, like it was
the
just...
The most talent in the AAC is so hard to swallow.
Yes, but apparently this has to do with, like, transfers that come in. You know, their quarterback is McMillan that came from LSU. Like,
yes, sir.
They've got 4- and 5-star grad transfers that don't equate into the recruiting rankings.
Mm-hmm.
And they got dudes. Like, those lines are absolutely legit. Tulane wins that game 38-31 over Houston. Houston was up 28-14 at the half.
Yes, sir.
And comes out the next quarter or next half. Houston puts up 3 points. Like, if you heard Dana Holgorsen talking after the game in his press conference, where he was like, you know, I look at all these stats, you know, the better team didn't win tonight. Like, the most simple stat in the world is yards per play, and Houston lost that by a full yard for the game. It's Dana, what are you doing, man? You had a chance to wrap this thing up. They're up 28-14 at the half. And Tulane comes out and just drives it methodically down the field. They're running the ball. They're throwing the ball. They're making these outstanding plays. McCleskey, the wide receiver, is a speed demon. But the fake kneel down. This offensive coordinator, Will Hall, and once upon a time, Ole Miss did not want him to be their offensive coordinator.
That's just, Gary, that's just, like, not true.
It's 100% true. It's absolutely true. He's coached at North Alabama. He coached at Louisiana Lafayette. Like, he's, and now he's over at
Tulane. He was on the list of people that they were going to interview, and he took himself off the list.
Hey, you following along with Fletchy. I see where you're coming from.
Where are you coming from, Gary?
That's because I'm coming from a whole different land of truth and reason.
Okay, and who wrote this truth of reason? Who told Gary this truth and reason?
I can't reveal my sources. Come on, man. By the way, I don't know if you realize this. Do you know who Ole Miss is? Not that this was supposed to be an Ole Miss conversation, but do you know who Ole Miss's interim athletic director is?
No.
Do you remember Keith Carter? Like the guy that used to play basketball at Ole Miss that wore like the knee-high socks? Like when they got beat by Valparaiso and the – no, anyway. Well, he's the interim athletic director, which was – blew my mind when I saw that. We'll actually talk about Ole Miss here in just a little bit because
– So you have a booster that said, I really want this guy, and they ended up not hiring him, and so therefore they didn't want this guy.
That
makes sense how you follow that logic.
Ole Miss was the one
– didn't have
job that he was up for.
He never got interviewed.
That's it.
He was on the list of candidates to interview for the job, and he never interviewed.
Either way, that wasn't supposed to be a big deal, but apparently we turned it into a big deal.
Well, you took a shot, and I have the obligation to stop and say, hold on, you're just taking shots for taking shots.
Okay, we're not gonna, you got a point. You got a point. That's fine. Either way, Will Hall with the fake kneel. That was absolutely ridiculous. And then the throw at the end of the game to McCleskey, who – now, you watched this on Thursday, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The throw, when he caught the ball, he still had to run like 20 yards. And the Houston defender is running step for step with him and never tried to tackle him. Did that seem a little strange to you?
No, I will tell you one thing that, all right, creative all you want. We do live in a world of player safety, all right? And we live in a world where when teams are kneeling the ball, when the defensive team is like that dick that just like is still fighting and whatever. And yeah. Like, come on, man, just let them kneel the game. You got beat or we're going into halftime, whatever. I don't like the fake kneel because the defense is taught if they are conceding, you concede.
Yeah.
And if you see them going up and you see them going to kneel, the DBs aren't trying to cover. No defensive player is on the line, is being aggressive. And you can say, well, that's their fault. They should be playing till the whistle blows. Also, but when they play till the whistle blows, they get 15-yard penalties thrown on them, and teams start fighting because, dude, we're trying to kneel it, you know?
Yeah. That's, then it becomes a problem.
I don't call that creative. You caught them sleeping in a situation where they're supposed to like, – they've been coached at every level now. When a team is kneeling, you concede. If you got beat, you just got beat, and that's just the end of it. And if it ends the game, it ends the game. If it ends a half or whatever reason they're kneeling it, then that's just the end of it.
Yeah, I can understand that.
But other than that one play, no. An outstanding game by Tulane. This was the one team we didn't know anything about. We didn't know what to expect when starting this season because, A, we had no clue about how to grade these grad transfers and how to evaluate them. And then the other thing is –
chemistry between Hall and Willie Fritz was going to be.
That's it. We had no idea. Willie Fritz has done nothing but run this triple option, and they were wanting to find some blend between spread, air raid, triple option. And we were like, how the hell is this going to work?
Yeah.
And we thought it could be confusing. We thought it could be complicated. And whatever it is they're doing to communicate to these players, they've picked it up. They've learned it.
They certainly
Tulane's a pretty good school. Maybe these guys are pretty smart, and they're figuring this thing out, and they do look good.
Now, you are so right about that. All right, let's move on to the next one. We'll kind of run through these fairly quickly. SMU 41, TCU 38. SMU is for real, and TCU is in some serious trouble here. SMU only 288 passing yards, which you would expect for them to pull off an upset like this. They would have to have something crazy happen. But no, TCU 236 rushing yards. TCU fumbled the ball three times. SMU threw one interception. TCU quarterback Max Duggan, 16 out of 36 passing for 188 yards, but he had three touchdowns. TCU has had six turnovers in three games. That turnover bug continues to haunt them, same as it did last year.
There was an entire season of that last year. Yeah, just 12 games of just being awful.
Well, and not effective passing the football. Now, you can run on SMU. Some of these Big 12 teams you're not going to be able to run on.
I don't know that I believe that.
It's some of them. TCU
has ran on everybody for years. They've only had a couple of years where they had like a big explosive passing game. They run the football and play good defense. There's nobody in the Big 12 that I think they can't run on.
I think Iowa State would give them fits. I think that Baylor would give them fits. I think Texas has a pretty good D-line right now. I think Oklahoma's I think there are people that they're not going to have as easy a time moving the football on.
I don't think they're going to beat many of those teams, but I don't think it's going to be because they can't run on them.
Either way, they are in trouble this season.
They're in trouble. If they continue to fumble the football, they're in trouble.
Yes. Moving on from that, Auburn 28, Texas A&M 20. The legend of Bo Nix continues to grow. 12 out of 20 for 100 yards passing. One touchdown. He had 12 carries for 38 yards. He got the very last first down to kind of end the ball game. Auburn only had 299 total yards. Texas A&M actually outgained them 391 to 299. A&M only had 56 yards rushing. If you watch this game, they should have gone away from the run early. Move to the quick passes, but I understand where they were coming from. You want to be able to establish something with the running game to keep you safe.
When the game wasn't out of hand.
Yeah. I mean, they were playing from behind all day, because they gave away points. Just they missed a field goal early. They fumbled on their own 38 and gave away points all day long. I mean, they were down 21-3 after the first drive of the second half.
Yep.
So, you know, yes, you have to pass the football in that situation. But, my goodness, Kellen Mond looked so much better. And, you know, you've got one of your star running backs out for the year after the Clemson game. You should have known you were going to have problems against that Auburn defensive line. And they didn't adjust and they didn't adapt until really it was too late. I mean, Auburn, there were spots where A&M could have made this a ball game. And while it did get a little entertaining late in the ballgame, they had a chance to really keep it close early. And Auburn, I mean, that was about as good a game plan as you could possibly have.
Auburn looks exactly like every massive defensive, not defense, just SEC team that we're used to.
Yeah.
Georgia, Alabama, now LSU has turned into offensive juggernauts, running spreads and quick up-tempo kind of stuff. Auburn still looks like old school SEC. We are going to play great defense. You're not going to run the ball on us, and we're going to run it down your throat.
Yeah, it's they generate rushing yards, right? Like it's not rushing yards the same as, you know, we're going to run it in between the tackles all the time.
Yeah.
Like they find ways to get those end arounds, like the first touchdown that they had that was, you know, a 50-some-odd yard, 59-yard, 60-yard touchdown run that was – like a double reverse kind of looking thing, right? Like jet sweep, but hand off to somebody.
Yeah, that's Gus Malzahn's own play calling, though.
Exactly. So they generate rushing yards. They find ways to do that. So,
And they do that because the offensive line is massive and super athletic.
Yeah. So, all right, so we are running super long. Let me see if I can get us through this.
Yeah, Texas, see if we can roll.
Texas ends their losing streak to Oklahoma State. You watched that one last night. Tell me your thoughts on that one.
Mike Gundy was super conservative, Mike Gundy, which I've never seen in my life. He settled for field goals over and over and over and over again. Yeah. I think they only punted once or twice in the entire game, but they were getting outscored as soon as Texas touched the ball because they get two field goals, Texas gets a touchdown, they're still leading the game.
Yeah.
Then they get another field goal, Texas scores a touchdown. Then they trade touchdowns for field goals, and you can't win the game that way.
The difference in the score was Gundy kicked two field goals inside the 10-yard line.
Yes.
And that was it. I mean, you lose by six at that point. So Texas 498 yards, Oklahoma State 494. So, of course, it was back and forth. It did not hit the over. Ellinger, 20 out of 28 for 281 yards, four touchdowns and a pick. He had 10 carries and 70 yards. The story was Keontae Ingram, really, 21 rushes for 114 yards for Texas. So they do have a running back. They look okay.
Yes, they do. Oklahoma State's going to get ran on by everybody.
Well, yes. Yes, Spencer Sanders, fantastic numbers. 19 out of 32, 268 yards, two picks. He had 18 runs for 109 yards and had one touchdown. And then, of course, Chuba Hubbard, 37 carries, 121 yards, two touchdowns. This was back and forth. It was Big 12 football, and it was really fun to watch.
I think Chuba Hubbard's the best running back in football right now.
I would go with Jonathan Taylor.
It's easy to say that. I would like to see them switch offensive lines, and let me see what we think.
You might be right.
I don't get me wrong. What you know, I love Jonathan. You know, I love Wisconsin. Let me put Chuba behind that line, and let's see how he does. Because Oklahoma State's offensive line is good. They're not great. And Texas is a real defense with a real defensive front. And he did really good last night still.
Yeah. No, I do agree with that. I do agree with that. All right, let's move on from there. The plight of second-year coaches. Let's give our rundown here. San Jose State 31, Arkansas 24. Ooh, that was rough. Florida 34, Tennessee 3. Cal 28, Ole Miss 20. So we are including Matt Luke in with the second-year head coaches. And Florida State, 35-24. They actually did okay. Arkansas's Chad Morris, 4-12 overall in a year and change. Three losses to group of five teams at this point, two of them at home. 0-9 against the SEC. San Jose State had 503 total yards. That was atrocious.
You're going to have to keep talking. I'm down to 5% of my battery. Give me a second. Keep running.
All right, go ahead. So Jeremy Pruitt, 6-10 overall in the last however many years, or year and a half. Florida absolutely dominated Tennessee. This smells like the end for Jeremy Pruitt. I'll let Chris talk about it here in just a second. Cal 28, Ole Miss 20. This one could have gone the opposite direction. It looked like Ole Miss scored at the end of the game. The Pac-12 officiating crew has had some major league troubles in the first few weeks of the season. Of course, with the missed call against Michigan State, against Arizona State in the Michigan State game last week. And now with Ole Miss possibly scoring a touchdown with no timeouts left, with about 5 seconds, 6-7 seconds left in the clock. There was some interesting stuff going on there. And then Florida State 35-24 over Louisville, which doesn't sound great, but they were up 21-0. They went down 24-21 in the fourth quarter and found a way to come back and actually score two touchdowns to end the game, as opposed to what they've done basically every other game this season, which was not be able to score in the fourth quarter and give up way too many points.
Sure.
So, all right. Where would you like to start? You want to start with Chad Morris or Jeremy Pruitt?
Chad Morris, we thought that he'd found his quarterback. Still think he has found his quarterback.
They put up 500 yards offense.
Doesn't matter.
They gave up 500 yards offense.
That team is still really bad. And I don't know how long you give a guy to rebuild. My problem is not I can't give you 3 years. I don't like the idea of just firing guys willy-nilly. But I also think – I don't see next year being any better than this year or last year.
Yeah,
and if it's not going to be, then why just give you the 3 years just because, well, we got to give you 3 years to build your team and this and that. Like, if I know that bringing in a crap load of freshmen next year aren't going to change this, then what good does it do to keep riding with this thing?
I mean, you're right.
And I can literally mimic that exact same conversation for Tennessee as well. As soon as you know you have a losing hand, you fold it. You just have to.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I don't know about Willie Taggart.
I do. You beat up on Louisville, but you've looked bad against everybody. And there's chaos in your locker room. There's chaos on your team constantly. Like, nobody seems to get along. There's no cohesion in anything. Even if you roll off a couple of good wins, what does it mean long term? I mean, do you really think the program is getting better?
No, I don't.
Are you just eventually just you're going to out athlete dudes and beat them?
Yeah, I think. I mean, you're right. You're going to out athlete some people, and it didn't look like there was a lot to be. I think maybe we're at a wait and see moment. To see exactly, because Louisville has been really well coached. Like, Scott Satterfield knows what he's doing.
Yeah, they've been well coached, but they still can't win games.
Yeah, that's kind of.
Because they don't, I mean, they're in a, this is not a knock on him. They're in a complete teardown.
Yeah, no, you're right.
So, I mean, that's the difference is he's in a situation where he's starting from zero.
So.
And you look good against him, great, congratulations. If you don't, then you're fired. If you do, it doesn't make. Doesn't mean anything.
What does the loss to Cal mean for Matt Luke, do you think?
I don't know that it means anything. I'm telling you. They made some coaching mistakes in this game. But they found, once again, guy goes down, and it you find somebody better on the bench. I have no idea what's going on with the backup quarterbacks in this world and why these guys aren't starting. But every time you seem to change starting quarterbacks, the new guy looks so much better than the old guy. I can't put the math together on that. And maybe that's a coaching flaw. Why are these coaches not able to pick this stuff up in the offseason and their spring practices and all these other things?
Or it could have to do with the defenses preparing more for one style of quarterback as opposed to –
I don't know that I believe that. I think defenses are taught to play receivers, offensive line, running backs, And the difference is yeah, if you go from a pocket passer to a running quarterback, you're absolutely right. But if they're both pocket passers or they're both running style guys, then I don't think that matters. Like, this guy touches the ball and that guy zips it in shouldn't change the way you play defense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you may be right.
But I don't think Matt Luka's long for this job to begin with. I thought he was going to sit there and take it until the sanctions were over and be the good Ole Miss guy and get paid for taking that one on the chin. Yeah. I still think that's in play.
I mean,
look around the SEC. I think there's some bad coaches in the SEC, but I also think there's some really good coaches that still struggle to win football games. We both think Mark Stoops is one of the best coaches in the SEC, but at Kentucky, he still doesn't have the resources. It's still a basketball state and team, and it's just they're going to be hard to be really good or great consistently. And Mark Stoops is still one of the best guys out there. If you're Ole Miss, you got to find a good guy if you want to get out of where you're at now.
No, I think you're exactly right. You are exactly. I mean, they obviously need an AD first. They need a chancellor. They need the people that are going to hire the people. So I think Matt Luke is probably fine for right now. But yeah, just another loss to add to the list of losses. But Arkansas.
I also think Cal's really good. That's why I don't agree. Think that's a knock on them at all. No. Cal's one of the best teams in the land. They deserve to be in the top 25. I mean,
they're the only undefeated team in the Pac-12 right now.
And they've got wins over on the road at Washington and on the road at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Look, their schedule's a hell of a lot harder than a lot of other undefeated teams.
I should have put more money on Cal to win yesterday.
I thought the heat was going to really affect them because it was hot as hell in Oxford. A lot of people texting me saying, man, if they could play in this, they're a legit team because it is warm. Bad.
It was absolutely warm.
And it did not seem to affect them at all.
No. I'm
Wilcox is a dude.
He's a beast, man. He's the real deal. Like, they found enough offense to be able to get that game.
I would throw any amount of money at that guy if I didn't have a head coach that I loved already.
I would hope that he would be able to find a different offensive coordinator.
If he wins games, do you care?
Wait, what?
If he wins games, do you care?
No, if he wins games, of course I don't care. But going to bigger schools and whatnot, like, it's – I don't know. You can go 7-5 at Cal – and be perfectly fine. You do that year after year. You turn.
But he doesn't have the talent at Cal that he will if he goes to a bigger school.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. You might be right.
Right now, and I don't know if we're gonna get to this team or not. Right now, I'd take him at Nebraska over a guy I really like, Scott Frost. Scott Frost, an offensive guy. His defense could take over a team like that and keep them in games and win a lot more games. Than bringing in an offensive guy where the defense is just a sieve and you got to hope you outscore people.
I did not put Nebraska on this list.
Nor should you have. Because this is a starting 11, not the ass end of the 11, okay?
Exactly. Because that game against Illinois last night was just whatever. And the fact that game day is going there,
it's just a damn shame.
I'm trying to get Felica on with us this week so that we can
I love Felica.
So that we can discuss it. But that's a strange decision. That's an odd.
That's a money decision.
That's I mean, you're probably right about that. But they do have a rule, like, they try not to go to anybody that's coming off of a loss.
That's a bad rule.
You know,
if Michigan loses week 11 and Alabama or Auburn loses week 11, you mean to tell me you're not going to the Michigan Ohio State game or the Iron Bowl? Come on. Come on. Yes, you are. Let's go see Clemson, South Carolina, because it's Clemson won. That's a bad rule.
Visit a team that – because Utah, of course, playing Washington State – well, I mean, both of them lost. But
both of them lost, I get it.
But Utah lost, and they're at home, so, like, the fan base maybe not as
– No, crazy. The fan base, like, is going to be just as jacked.
Well, the other side of this is the slate for next week got a little bit, like less exciting because of all of these, you know, last minute losses last night. But it also makes it where like ABC was already going to Lincoln for the game. Like they're broadcasting that as their primetime game.
Because that's fine. That's okay. It's going to be a 30-point game.
So, yeah, and you and I have talked about this. The Alabama-Ole Miss game is the 2:30 CBS game.
That's going to be a 30-point game as well.
Yeah, that lets you know that there's really not that many.
Congratulations. You got a 30-pointer there.
Fantastic weekend, like, for a slate of ball games.
That's right.
And then next week we'll be back to the week after that we'll be okay. Like we'll have these weeks sometimes. To wrap this up before we get into our top tens, I had to shout out the boys. The App State Mountaineers, as you can see, pull off the upset. They go to Chapel Hill. They get the win over Mack Brown and the Fighting Tar Heels. Man, look, this was not as simple as I thought it might have been. I thought they might have had the better offense. I thought they, you know, head coaching might have been similar, you know, all that. Like, I felt good about this game going into it. I actually bet App State +3.5 last Sunday when the line came out. I didn't give it out as one of my picks because as the week went on, more people were betting App State. More people were giving them respect. I thought, okay, well, maybe UNC doesn't look past them towards Clemson next week. Maybe they realize, oh, these guys are still in our state, and this is a legit matchup. App State is really good. They blocked a field goal on the final play of the game. It was a 56-yard field goal that would have tied the game. They blocked that. UNC had 3 turnovers to 1. North Carolina outgained Appalachian State 469 to 385. Like, this was, looking at everything other than the turnovers, this was an even matchup. Like,
but we talk about that all the time. Turnover is the ultimate equalizer.
Yeah.
You win the turnover battle, you win the game.
And North Carolina lost the turnover battle. They had 2 interceptions and 1 fumble, and Appalachian State had 1 interception, and that was
2 weeks in a row. Mack Brown takes a team that's hot as fire, and everybody's talking about them, and they lose to in-state competition that, for the most part, big picture, not as big, lesser programs without question.
Yes,
a small private school and a former Division IIA school.
Yes,
like. This is, and both those programs are good. Both those programs are much better than they've been. So this is, I'm not saying they're nobodies. We all know who they are.
But both of these teams are still undefeated.
That's right. That's right.
Can't say that for the Pac-12.
Hey, man, North Carolina recruiting's got to be tough. It's got to be tough in that state because you don't have an Alabama or an LSU or a Clemson saying you're not getting out of the state. But
you do have a whole bunch of schools in the state.
You got a lot of schools that are all competing for the same dudes.
Yeah.
It's not like we run one style and so we're going after a different caliber of. They all run the same offense. Yeah. They all look the exact same.
I mean, you got Duke, Wake Forest, North Carolina, North Carolina State, App State, and then all of the little bitty schools. And then you've got the big schools that are trying to go in there and get players like Clemson.
Dudes.
Tennessee, yeah. Georgia, et cetera. South Carolina's got to get their kids. Like, it's – North Carolina is a battleground, man.
It really is. Like, I was thinking about that when I was watching this game yesterday. I was like, God, man, could you imagine having to recruit in that state? Like, that be your home state to try to pull kids out of?
Oh, it'd be
– like, it's not like Florida or Texas ridiculous. Or California where you don't have to get on an airplane. You could just roll out of bed and find – 12 4-stars or 3-stars that probably should be 4-stars and say, all right, you guys get on the bus. Let's go. You just send out a couple of text messages. They're there in 30 minutes because they all live right there. I mean, Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, like those are different. Like we put out a ton of athletes here in the South, Georgia, same thing, but we don't have this kind of demand. You're losing them to big boys because there's a bunch of 5-stars. You got a crap load of three stars coming out of North Carolina, and everybody wants them.
Everybody wants them. No, you're God, right.
It's insane.
You are right. All right. Before we get into our top 10, let's talk about this really quick. I want to give like a running schedule of this or a running tally of this every week. And we'll just do it quickly.
You don't have to.
Strength of schedule. Now, I'm not going to look at the analytical number yet, but I just want to talk about Texas A&M, who lost again yesterday. They are the toughest team on Clemson's schedule, right? So Georgia Tech, who they played first, lost last week to the Citadel. Texas A&M loses at home to Auburn. Syracuse had a battle with Western Michigan. Clemson beat Charlotte yesterday. Now let's run through. North Carolina loses at home to App State. That's who Clemson has next. Florida State sitting at 2-2. That's who Clemson has after that. Next up, Louisville, who is sitting at 2-2, who just lost to Florida State. Boston College, a team that got boat raced by Kansas at home by 24. They get them at home. Then they play Wofford. They play at NC State, who got boat raced by West Virginia. Then you've got, at the very end here, Wake Forest, who is currently sitting at 4-0, and there's a realistic chance that you could get Wake Forest to 9-0. There's a legit chance.
Oh, God. I can't live in that world. I can't live in that world.
Like, how am I going to talk to my kids about a 9-0 Wake Forest?
I don't know how to explain that to people.
I guess your kids weren't born yet when Jim Grobe had them, like, playing in the Orange Bowl and everything, right?
No.
When was that, 07?
Yeah, I'm a 2011 father.
That was the 07 year.
Yeah.
That was when everything else went haywire and Wake Forest won the ACC.
Yes, the craziest year in college football history.
Oh, man.
My Tigers won the championship that year.
Yeah.
Chaos be damned. That is the Baton Rouge voodoo.
Les Miles wins a national championship that year.
If you don't believe in voodoo, go back and look at 2007 and tell me it's just not real. Just tell me it's not real. I'll call you a liar. Real.
And then, of course, Clemson wraps it up with a visit to South Carolina, who they have dominated here recently, and looked terrible at Missouri yesterday.
And they're just looking worse. They looked good in a fight against Alabama. They got their brains beat in. Yeah. And then they just look awful at Missouri.
Yeah, just awful. Just awful. All right, you want to roll through your top 10?
Yeah. So,
do you want to start?
All right, now, I do this differently. You and I used to. I don't know how you're going to do it. But the way I do the top 10 is I only look at what I have seen.
That's exactly how I do it.
I do not care about preseason numbers. I do not care about, you know, this team is big and so they're supposed to be good. I look at who you've played. If you've played a good team, top-ranked team, you got wins against those teams, you are ranked higher than if you're undefeated. And you got wins against nobodies. So
that is a little different than how I do it. Here, I'm doing it based on what I have seen because not everybody has gotten a chance to play. Everybody, right? Like they're big.
That's their fault. That's their fault. These teams make their own damn schedule, Gary. Your boys picked Duke. You hand selected Louisville last year. Okay. Here's what I got.
I'm not even talking about Alabama, but that's okay.
This is what I got. I think the best team in the country right now is Wisconsin. I think they have the best resume in the country. They beat the hell out of a team that I think is still pretty good. Do I think they're a top 10 team? No. But do I think that defense is legit? Yep. And they broke their will. They hurt their feelings. And I don't think that's going to be the last time they do that. I think they're the best overall team from top to bottom in the country, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Second team on here, based on resume alone, LSU. They've beat the hell out of everybody they've played, and they've got a road SEC win. I know it's against Vanderbilt. Georgia scored 30 against that Vanderbilt team. LSU scored 66, okay? And they went to Austin, Texas in a monster game on the road, hostile environment. That win alone might put them over Wisconsin. Their defense doesn't look nearly as good as Wisconsin's does. They get that. Number three team, this resume might be the best. Not might be. It is the best in the country right now. That is the Auburn Tigers. They have two top 10 teams that I thought when they played them were really good wins. Neither one of them were in Auburn. They played them both, one neutral site, one on the road. And this is the best resume. They look like a great team with a quarterback that is doing just enough to keep them in games and nothing to lose games. He's played so smart, so slick. Number four, the most dominant team. Now, they've played nobody, but they have murdered everyone is Ohio State. This is the one team that I have that hadn't played anybody that I have really high because they are taking no prisoners, and I am very anxious to see them get into some better competition. I don't think we're going to get it this week against Nebraska. I think they are going to I don't know that they can make the line big enough.
Yeah, I agree.
Last night's win, Georgia against Notre Dame, that is a for real Notre Dame team. I think that was an incredible win, great atmosphere, and I think that's a super complete team. Next two teams ain't played nobody, but they look good against everybody. One of them looks way better than the other. That's Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma is incredible. I think Jalen Hurts is amazing, and I love watching this team play. Other than that, I got Clemson. I think Clemson is a great team that's going to have a disastrously bad resume, but they do have a win against Texas A&M, and I think Texas A&M is really good, which is why I have them over Alabama. Bama killing everybody they play. Their offense doesn't look unbelievable like it has, but I think they're holding a lot back right now because they don't have to. I think their defense has given up points to some of these teams that I don't understand how or why, but once again, that could easily be because they're just holding everything back because they don't need to break out the playbook. And they could easily be the best team in the country, but I can't give it to them with this resume. And then after that, I got 2 1-loss teams over a bunch of undefeated teams still. I got Notre Dame still in this thing. That loss to Georgia last night was the most impressive loss that anybody has on their resume. And it's probably going to – if they go undefeated with that being the only loss – man, I know that they've been embarrassed in the past. I don't think Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, LSU, Auburn, Ohio State, I don't think anybody embarrasses them. I think they hang with everybody. I don't know they beat everybody, but I think they belong in the conversation with everyone.
Okay.
And then my last team, I think Oregon is still really good, and I think they have a neutral game, last-minute defeat against Auburn, who I think is an incredible football team right now. And I can't leave them out of this.
Oregon should have won that ball game, 100%.
Yeah, I mean they controlled the majority of the game. If you want to fault somebody, fault Mario. Yeah. But that team is really good. That's my top 10, and I'm sure it won't finish that way. But I'm gonna tell you this, Wisconsin.
But as of right now, yeah, I'm with you.
It makes my heart smile watching this football team.
I have. Basically the same thing, only in a different order. Okay. And I'll roll through mine quickly. Number one, I've got Ohio State just because they are ridiculous right now. Like, and it's what I was saying is mine isn't based just on resume, on whatever. It is based on, holy crap, how good are you, right?
And those other three teams I have above them just have wins that you can't take off the resume.
No, that makes sense.
Those are incredible wins.
That makes sense. Number two, I've got Georgia. While they didn't look dominant, that is a legit Notre Dame team. So I'm all in on Georgia here. Number three, Wisconsin. Number four, LSU. Number five, I've got Clemson. Six, Alabama. I've got Auburn 7, Oklahoma 8, Notre Dame 9, Oregon 10. That's how I roll through mine. And a lot of the reasoning is similar to yours. I think everybody in the top 10 right now, every one of them could beat everybody else.
Yeah.
Right. I could see Oregon beating Ohio State. I could see Georgia beating Alabama. I could see Notre Dame beating Wisconsin. I could see, like, there's a lot of different ways that this stuff could go depending on where the game is, et cetera. And I think they're all pretty damn good right now. And I think
with their schedule, Auburn and LSU could finish with 2 losses pretty easily. And I don't know that takes away from them. Auburn, LSU, and Alabama have the toughest road to hoe out of all these teams.
Oh, yes.
And it's not close. You want to talk about strength of schedule? those three teams, A, have to play each other. They still have to play A&M. Auburn's gotten through them. Yep. Auburn played Oregon. LSU played Texas on the road.
Yeah.
Like, these teams, when they're done, here's what's going to suck. Two of those teams are going to be so far out of the conversation because they're going to have at least two losses based on the way just – I mean, I guess it could be a three teams finishing 11-1, and you look at tiebreakers after that if they beat each other. But that shouldn't discredit or hurt them. I know the SEC is not the dominant SEC that it's been in the past.
Yeah, but the middle the tier down – really. Really
the good. top four teams in the SEC, and I still love A&M. I still think they're real good, but that schedule was brutal, man.
Yeah, and the LSU the next level down.
A&M could easily beat LSU and Bama. They just could. They could. They're
I'll
good
tell
enough
you this,
to do
though. That. If you had the under 7.5 for Auburn, and the over 7.5 for Texas A&M, that game yesterday flipped everything. Flipped everything. And I had both of those. I had Auburn under 7.5. I had A&M over 7.5.
I think I have the over on both of those guys.
Yeah, you had the over on both.
I'm probably going to push one and lose one. Lose one and win one. So I'll push on that.
So, but yeah, it flipped the narrative on the SEC rankings. And whew, it is going to be a wild year, man. I am so excited about this. We're through 4 weeks. I'm ready to go watch some NFL stuff. You ready to get out of here?
Yeah, man.
Let's do it. Let's first off tell everybody go over to winningcureseverything.com. Check out all of our social media stuff over there. Check out basically everything over at winningcureseverything.com. Subscribe to us on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Leave some comments. Leave some 5-star reviews for us. We do appreciate those of you that have done it. We will we'll read off a couple of them on the show on Tuesday. Go to tunicatravel.com. Tunica, Mississippi, the South's premier sports gambling destination. They have got incredible stuff going on down there. Tunicatravel.com is where you can find out more stuff about it. Chris, we're going to do the NFL recap on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, man.
I'm all in with it. Guys, enjoy your Sunday. Enjoy your Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday. Whew, and I am pumped about it. Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. Visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.